The following contains adult language, content, and description of actions that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Media host and producer of World Music Views, J.R. Watkiss, will be taking his exclusive interviews online with the World Music Views podcast. The show that is also aired on TVJ's Entertainment Report will transform into full-length interviews with a number of dancehall and reggae greats.
YouTube certainly validated music consumption in the Caribbean community.
World Music Views podcast is now available on all streaming platforms.
Okay, my name is Zach Starkey and you're watching World Music Views.
Pretty nice. Welcome to World Music Views. We're just going to start from the beginning and come right up. Just introduce yourself, tell me who you are and how you got into music.
Well, I'm Zach Starkey and I am a musician who started as a guitar player. Because I saw a band called T-Rex with a guitar player called Mark Bolan when I was 6 years old. And I asked my dad to get me a guitar. And then I realized that my dad was a friend of this guy and he hung out in our house a lot. And he was a real inspiration to me. So I started as a guitar player when I was 6 or 7 years old. And then when I was, nearly around 10, I heard a band called The Who and I switched to the drums because of their music. And then that was when I was like 10 years old. And then 20 years later, I ended up playing drums in that group, which was my favorite group when I'm growing up until about 70. They were my favorite group growing up. But when the Sex Pistols came along, that changed everything for me. And that became a group which I found by myself as a young person looking for something that belonged to us, you know. And so I got into punk in a big way, and punk led me to reggae and dub in a big way.
Before we get to your reggae insurgents. Sure. You said your dad introduced you, but you told him to get you a guitar. Who's your dad, for those who don't know?
My dad is Ringo from the Beatles.
The Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr is the greatest rock and roll drummer in the world.
And how was that like growing up in the shadows of one of the greatest in the world, or if not the greatest in the world?
He was very encouraging to me, you know, and I never really thought about it. In fact, when I was quite in my teens, I rejected the Beatles because they were kind of in my way, because they were always the focus. Whatever I did with my own music, there was always, the press was always that focus. And I used to get a little bit upset that when we would play live, the press would concentrate on me and not the other members in the band and things like that, you know. Natural sort of teenage rebellion, and I think that it's kind of did me, so I kind of like dismissed them for a long time, and I think that did me a lot of good maybe, because then I found my own way and I didn't think about it in any way. My dad is my dad, you know. I when I think of my dad, I think of a guy chasing me down in a garden saying, if I get my hands on you, I'm going to kill you, you know, kind of thing, you know, like everyone's dad. You know, I just think of him like a dad, and then when I see him on the TV, I get a little bit misty and realize, wow, Dad, you did that, man. Look what you did, man. You changed the world, right? You took music and you changed the world. And that makes me quite emotional, as I am getting now, so I'll pull it in a bit. But yeah, it never really bothered me. I just sort of got on with what I was doing, you know. And when it started to bother me, I just sort of put it aside and almost act like it didn't exist, really. And then when I was about 25, I started to listen to the Beatles properly and realised what I'd been missing. But yeah, so
did you get like concert opportunities? What's the biggest concert you've seen, other than the Beatles, of course?
I never saw the Beatles. The Beatles stopped touring when I was 2 years old, or even 1 year old. And I don't even remember much about the Beatles at the time, because they, apart from if there's a party at our house or something, I don't know. I don't remember Beatlemania. I don't remember sort of experiencing that. We were probably kept hidden away a little bit, and we were sort of raised to keep our mouths shut about everything, you know. So I suppose, in a way, I never thought about it, JR, until you asked me that, because no one asked. It's like we were kind of like. Kept over here, you know, kept at home, or kept at go to school and then come home, you know. And it was like, and we were grown up to, like, you know, can't tell everyone where your dad lives and stuff like that, you know. And there would occasionally be, like, you know, people going through the trash, or people hanging around outside the house, you know, like Beatle fans, you know. So we were kind of kept away from it, but I was always surrounded by music. There were always musicians at our house, friends of my dad. And the thing about my dad is a very natural musician, and if there's ever musicians around, they always play. Everyone plays. So I grew up in a musical environment where I was learning to play instruments. So I was always put in that environment, almost like my dad would put me on the drums and go, "Hey, get on my kid," you know. And I would get to play with. I mean, I played with so many people when I was young that were friends of my dad's, you know. And all that goes in, you know, musically. But all I remember is my childhood was great, you know. It was music. And then this horrible thing called school got in the way.
So I interview a lot of superstar kids. I've interviewed the Marley kids. And one of the things they tell me all the time is that family is important. They always insist on that. Family is important. Rowan Marley, who is not into music, he's into coffee. He said family is important. Damian Marley, Ziggy, family is important. I got a chance to meet with you the other night, and you and your lovely wife and daughter, who's the center of the party, by the way.
Yeah, man.
How important has family been to your development as a musician, as a person?
Well, I have a grown up daughter, so I've had a kid since I was very, very young. Luna is my second child, but my first child came from a different relationship when I was very, very young. So she's a musician too, you know, but I think that the way I was operating then was I would always leave home to go to do music and go on tour and then come home, and it's always great to get home, and it's great to get home now. But I mean, now I have a young family with Luna, and sure, I've been with her for 18 years, you know, and we've traveled together. We had a band. We started a band like a year after we met, and then we gigged and recorded and released some singles and stuff. And then she would come on tour with me. And since we had Luna, it's not as easy to do that. So just recently, it's the first time we've been apart. We were apart for about a month, and it was real hard, very, very hard. But fantastic to get back together, you know. So family is extremely important, but I don't think that musically it was really what I was doing. And my parents split up when I was very young anyway. And I just got out there and I just played music, you know. That's what I did from the age of 12. I was playing live in pubs and clubs, you know, because I was very lucky that I learned the drums, and then some older kids moved in our street and we formed a band, and I was 12 years old, and I was out playing, like, you know, every week at least, you know. So I started very young. So I've always just been doing my own thing. But I would say family's important, but I'm not sure how important it's been to my music.
You reigned supreme in the 80s as the drummer, the top drummer in the 80s. Like, every band wanted you, right?
No, not really, but a few bands wanted me, and I was very lucky that a lot of them were bands that I liked, because if you get a gig to play with a band that you love, it's not a job. It's almost like you're the defender of the music, you know, and you're there for more than just to do a job. You're there to take care of it and do it right. And I've been very, very lucky in that two of my favourite bands of all time have asked me to play the drums with them. And that is, like, not as only is it an honour, it's something that in my soul I think needed to be done properly. And I knew I would do it properly, and I wouldn't ever cut no corners, or, you know, and I know everything about, I know all the lyrics, I know everything about this band, you know. And then you go to play the drums or any instrument in that band, and you can, I'm sure that it's a feeling that comes through, because there's love in it, you know, and respect and power comes from all that stuff when you put it together with music.
Rolling Stone magazine called your Madison Square Garden performance one of the 50 best moments that changed rock and roll.
Whoa.
How you feel about that? And this was your October 2001 performance
The concert for New York.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that was a very emotional concert for everybody there, and everybody that played and everybody that attended. I mean, we were literally, the front rows were the first response, you know, the firemen, and this, it was extremely emotional, and we stepped up and we killed it, man. We stepped up and we did it right, and we really did nail it. I remember it happening, and it was like we were like getting lifted up slightly, and then lifted up a lot by the emotion of the audience.
How you flip from rock and roll to reggae? How did that work? Is it a good synergy? Like, Bob Marley have roots rock, reggae. How did you make that conscious flip?
Well, oh man. I don't know. That is a hard question. I don't know how that happened. Because if you told me like 10 years ago, you know, or 5 years, say, I don't know, if you said 5-6 years ago, you know, you're going to be living in Jamaica and making records with Sly and Robbie and doing all this stuff, you know, I would have thought, no, you're crazy, man. That's not happening, is it? And
how did you make the flip from rock to reggae?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, Shushu, who was just here, and myself, we made a record in 2015, which was released in 2016, called Issues, which we made for Teenage Cancer Trust, which is a charity run by the WHO, which builds teenage cancer wards in hospitals, because teenagers in hospital with cancer, you are usually put with very young children or very old people who are seriously sick, and they have no support group, no peer group really. So Roger Daltrey from the WHO came up with this idea to build wards for kids for teenagers with cancer, and started the charity in 2000. So Shush and I recorded a record which was covers, but covers done with the rhythm sections of the band which we covered, which were all bands that we loved. and one of the rhythm sections that we worked with was Fully Forward and Santa Davis, who are from Soul Syndicate, because we wanted to cover Peter Tosh's version of Get Up, Stand Up.
Which I listened to, it's super dope.
Okay, so yeah, so we're going to cover Peter Tosh's version, Get Up, Stand Up. And the day before, we'd been working with the rhythm section from Marilyn Manson, who is a drummer called Gil Sharon. Thanks, Tony. It turns out Gil, I was talking about Peter Tosh and how much we love him and we love his, you know, mantra and his just, I mean, he got up and he stood up and he never sat down, right? You know, and Gil had written a book on reggae and ska drumming, and he handed me the phone and I went, hello, and the guy goes, oh, it's Santa. Wow. Right in the middle of this conversation, you know, we're talking about like Peter and Word, Sound and Power, and he put, give me the phone, and it's Santa, and I told Santa what we were doing, and he said, okay, me and Fully be there tomorrow. Okay, so we cut the track, spent the day cutting track, we cut two tracks actually, one that wasn't released, we cut Mystic Man as well, because we love a lyric to that. So we got to know them guys, and then we got to know Tony Chin, who's also from Soul Syndicate, because all them, these three guys all live in Los Angeles, right, which is where we were at the time. And we actually, when the record came out, we did some shows with them as the Shush Syndicate at the Viper Room and a couple of other clubs in LA. Then we made a video, and a video was seen by a man called Kingsley Cooper, who owns Pulse. And we got to Kingston and walk in a room full of the greatest musicians that I'd only seen on the back of record covers and in videos and things, you know, a room full of the people that made the greatest music, you know. And we were, it was an honor to be a part of it. And then we played the show in 2016 and we were invited back in 2017 to play again. And while we were getting ready to come and play again, we did a show, did some more shows with Santa and Fully and Tony. And we had a thought about making a record of, me and Shush were sitting around and we thought, you know, we're going back to Jamaica. Anyway, we thought of a title, Red, Gold, Green and Blue. Let's take the blues, lyrics of the blues to Jamaica and link them with the musicians of Jamaica and reinterpret them. Okay, so we got a short list of our favorite blues songs, with a playlist, which was 3 hours, right, short list. Right, and we got to Jamaica and the first thing that we did was a session with Robbie Shakespeare. First time we'd met him. And it was a joy to work with that man. He was so encouraging and quite strict, encouraging, and we hit it off, man. We're like, the three of us had a great time, you know, recording. And Robbie kind of ended up producing us. We didn't ask him to, but he just did, you know. So we got a good relationship going. And then I said to Robbie, hey, look, man, we're going to make this record. And he goes, we'll do it. Right. So Robbie said, yeah. Then we play this Peter Tosh again. We're sitting backstage waiting to go on stage with my guitar, and I need to take a piss. So I give my guitar to the guy sitting next to me. I'd like Mohawk, and I come back and I say, thanks, man, thanks for taking care of my guitar, I'm Zach, nice to meet you. He goes, hi, I'm Freddie McGregor. I was like, wow, you're Freddie McGregor, I didn't recognize you, because he's got like a mohawk, right? And I told Freddie about the project, and he said he agreed to do it too. And then from there, we very quickly built a studio in Ochi and made the record with Slime Robbie. Horsey played on some of it. Cyril Neville played percussion on it. Michael Rose sang three songs. Big Youth sang three songs. And Toots sang one song. Hang on, who else is on this record? Kid Asai sang on one. And Andrew Tosh sang amazing vocals on a Muddy Waters song. So we made the record, and that came out, and it was critically acclaimed, which is always nice, but it's not enough, is it? You know, it's not enough to get everybody paid. So we made that record, and then we made, it was so good, and the scene, and it kind of became a scene, the recording situation where we built this makeshift studio with no, it was just equipment and some couches, you know, and we made it, and we started to record, and it turned into a scene, and everybody was coming every day, whether they were working or not. So it just got to like, hey, Sly, how you doing, man? You know, we're not cutting no drums today, and it's how I was just going to hang out. It's all, you know, and we created this, well, it created itself. Music created a scene within a little studio, and for about 2.5 weeks, we're all there, and everybody got to, you know, well, we got to know everyone, and things were going so good that we stayed on for another, like, until the end of 2019, really. And in between going on tour with The Who, well, go on tour with The Who and then come back, right? But we made 7 records here, and 3 of them have been released, and the others are to be released.
How do you suggest, you said something just now about it's not enough to get everybody paid. You're from a successful line of musicians where in your era, persons were selling records. Your father certainly sold records.
Yep.
How do you suggest reggae and dancehall music sell records?
Well, the problem that we had was, okay, so we made that record because we came to Jamaica and played with the Peter Tosh Show and met lots and lots of musicians, and that our attitude kind of fitted in. We come with a punk attitude, and it kind of fitted in with the musicians that we met, and we made that record, and then we funded it. Me and Shush funded that record, and then then we formed Trojan Jamaica, because everybody that we worked with, and I don't want to get into this too deep, because the thing about Trojan Records is the music's unbeatable. But everybody was a little bit, I want to keep this mild, and it's hard. Nobody got paid. No one got paid. That's how everyone felt about Trojan Records. So we said, look, what about we? And we checked in there, and Trojan West Indies was available, the name. So we actually put it to everyone, why don't we call it Trojan Jamaica, and sort of let's you know, bring it back, you know, bring it back. And everybody that we work with got a percentage. It's not like, you know, we just bought our way through town. And then we made a distribution deal with BMG, right? We did the best they could with it. But reggae music is seen, or Jamaican music, reggae music and dancehall. Dancehall is getting bigger now, isn't it? But reggae music is seen as like, and it represents 5% of the total market. So the big music companies see it as a niche market. And if you see it as a niche market, then it's going to be a niche market, because that's how you're seeing it. And we're trying to, like, we really, really, like, trying to, you know, we hired outside people to help, you know, product managers and things like that, you know, to educate people on the music, you know, like, because it's hard because if people don't see a return, that they're going to get a return straight away, they won't invest in art anymore. And I find that, I don't think that's cool, really. You know, they won't invest in an idea that you have to like TikTok it. How many TikToks and all that stuff, right? And I know it's the modern world and I'm old or oldish, but
they're making content more than making music.
Well, the people that end up controlling the music are judging it not on the music, they're judging it on numbers. Okay, they're not judging it on art. They're not judging it on its musical worth. They're judging it on its likes.
And we have 10 minutes left. Who are these people? Who are these people that control music?
There are people that... man, what a question. I think things are coming round slowly, right? Okay, without getting into like pointing fingers or whatever, but I think things are coming round slowly, and I'm really glad about that because... reggae was like when I grew up, reggae was just pop music to me, right? It wasn't world music, it was just pop music. It was on Top of the Pops every Thursday night, you know, and it was part of our musical scene. And it was just that's a pop record, it wasn't, you know, do you know what I mean? It was just part of it. And to me, it's always been around, but now you're hearing it all, now I hear it everywhere. You know, and I hope everybody's coming round and can stop thinking about this niche market and go, hey, you know, it just needs a change people's heads a bit. And I don't want to get into like who thinks like that, because I think people, you know, we're living in a world where everything is based on social media and not particularly on, if you're going to be, you know, like there are great artists out there, they are really good, there are great artists out there, but I think too much is based on the social media aspect, but that's just how it is now, and that's how kids are now, and that's just where we're at, you know. We tried to change it, but you know, it's very hard to convince people to spend a lot of money to make products if they can't see a guarantee of getting it back. All right.
Real quickly, give me your top five reggae acts.
Toots and the Maytals, Peter Tosh, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Burning Spear, Dr. Alan Montado, and Dillinger. And that's six, sorry.
Who's that second to last one?
Dr. Alan Montado.
Okay, cool. That was quick. That was a quick playlist right there. As we wrap up, you and your partner are very much in this thing called music together. She's a bona fide musician. I love the get up, stand up rendition. She's a real rock star. And I hope she's going to be on my next episode after you.
Yeah, she tried to bust in on this one already.
who's the bigger musician, you or her? And I'm gonna ask her that same question.
Without her, none of this would ever have happened. Right? She's got the balls, man. In a good way. Right? But she's a ballsy lady and she ain't scared. When we made these records, she sang all the guide vocals. If she hadn't been, you know, she worked just as hard as everyone else. We cut the music while she sang the vocals, and Uroy voiced it, and she sang all the other bits, you know, because someone had to do that while we're playing the music, or we don't know what's going on, no one knows where we are. So basically that's where we're at. We do everything together. We've been a band since 2006, and we learned to produce by having our own band together, and we're still doing it.
And what are you working on now out of your Ocharia studios?
At the moment, oh God, I wish I could tell you, man, but we're working on some very special thing for a very special artist who we love and we miss terribly. And that's all I can say.
Sounds legendary. Sounds legendary. I'd love to come check it out. We don't have to broadcast it, but I'd love to come get an ear on it, and we could do an article on that when the release time comes, you know?
Yeah, man. Thanks, Joe.
Big up, big up, big up, big up, big up. Thank you so much, my bro. And I hope to see you soon. I had a really good time with your family and your crew the other night. You know, I learned learned so much from Cam, who I'm also interviewing as well.
You're gonna need to put a couple of hours aside for that, dude.
This was brilliant, man. This was awesome.
Okay. Yeah, great. Thanks, Joe. I enjoyed it, actually. I could talk all day about this stuff, you know what I mean?
We could do a part two. We could definitely do a part two.
Wicked. Thanks, Joe. That was great. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, man. Big up. All right. Cool.
Maximum respect, man. Bye.
And that's it for World Music Views. Follow World Music Views on Instagram and Facebook. And follow me at JR Watkiss on Instagram. I'm JR.